Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our connections with it. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak. Well, our first guest today will be Carolyn Wara and Molly Brooks. Carolyn Wara is the executive director of Recycle Utah. Molly Brooks is the director of outreach and communications with Recycle Utah. And yes, we're going to be talking, among other things, the hazardous waste collection event that's coming up. I know Leslie covered that in part of her segments earlier. We're going to dive a little deeper into the numbers. It's really interesting, some of the trends that you've seen over the years, how long you've been doing it, how much waste you guys have collected and kept out of the Summit County landfill. So we're going to talk all about that and other things going on with Recycle Utah in the first half of the show.
Then in the second half of the show, we'll be speaking with Jason Bartow, a certified arborist, and of course, the executive director of Releaf Utah. We'll be talking to him about the new name and somewhat new organization and getting some updates from them on what's going on this spring with trees and how we can get ready for summer.
That's right. Releaf, the former Wasatch Back Trees, right?
That's right.
The organization formerly
More or
known
less,
as.
The organization, exactly. They just go by a symbol now.
Yeah. So all of that and some news on, you have some news, Nell, about what's going on at Swanner.
Yeah, that's right. We get so many questions at this time of year about sandhill cranes. I think we all look forward to them coming back every spring. And we'll have some information about that.
All right, that, and I have some information about an op-ed that was written, guest editorial in this past Park Record titled Park City is Spreading False Info About Climate Solutions. Some information there that just needs to be addressed. Now, we don't take phone calls during the show, but you can join in on today's discussion by posting your comments and questions to our Facebook page, KPCW, This Green Earth. Our connections with and impacts upon the environment. That's what This Green Earth is all about. Stay with us.
Support for KPCW programming has been provided by the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance, a nonprofit organization dedicated to protecting Utah's remaining Red Rock Wilderness lands. SUWA and Utah's Red Rock Wilderness need your support now more than ever. To learn more about how you can become involved, please visit the SUWA website at suwa.org.
Hi, this is Carolyn from Recycle Utah. Don't dump that cooking oil in your trash or drain. When cooking oil ends up in the landfill or drain, it can be harmful to our water. Recycle Utah has a solution for you. Bring your used liquid cooking oils and fats to the recycling center, and it'll be used to make biodiesel. Recycle Utah is your local nonprofit recycling drop-off center, bringing water conservation ideas to you for over 25 years, and we support KPCW.
This is Steve Roney with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Utah Properties. We continue to be proud supporters of KPCW, our local source for Park City news. Our agents are Summit and Wasatch County's source for real estate, and we can be reached at bhhsutah.com.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And in the studio with us, of course, is part of the team from Recycle Utah, Director Carolyn Wara, and Director of Communications, Molly Brooks. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Well, you guys have all kinds of events coming up in the next month or so here, and we are going to start by touching on your hazardous waste collection. We heard a little bit about it on the news this morning and wanted to dig into the background of that a little bit. But why don't you guys start by giving us, you know, the date, the time, and the basics.
Sure. So it is our spring hazardous waste collection event. We have two a year. It's this Saturday, May 6th from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. for residents only, no business or commercial waste. It's at the Canyons Cabriolet parking lot. We are accepting a lot of different items, things that you might have in your house, have in your garage. So things like paints, motor oil, batteries, cleaners, fertilizers, CFL bulbs, mercury-containing items, pharmaceuticals, and electronic waste.
Right.
So anything you don't know what to do with and you've been stashing in the corner of your recycling bin, this is the time to bring it over.
Right. Although there are a couple of exceptions, particularly with respect to electronic waste, i.e. TVs.
Yes. So they need to be able to be lifted by one person, so nothing too big. Otherwise, you can bring those to Recycle Utah for a fee any day of the week.
Right, one person. So don't show up with your 53-inch screen.
Yeah.
you know, there's a limit to what you guys will take.
Exactly.
And that's one of those things. Refrigerators, you're not going to take refrigerators.
Yeah, no refrigerators.
Not taking large appliances like washers, dryers, those types of things, correct?
Right.
No, don't bring them.
Yeah, don't bring those. Washers and dryers, other big appliances besides refrigerators, if they are still usable, you can take them to Recycle Utah and we can resell them. If they're not reusable, they're broken, and they're mostly metal, we can recycle those instead.
Okay. So I tell you what, you can bring them.
Yeah.
You're just going to drive away with them,
yes,
too.
Yes, right.
All right, so don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this is just partly because the Sunrise Rotary helps us a lot with this event. They bring about 20 to 30 volunteers out, and we just don't want anybody hurting their back trying to help you lift stuff out of your car. So we have tools and forklifts and things for that at the Recycle Center, so we're better equipped to handle that big stuff there.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm looking at what you collected this past October.
Yeah.
The event. It's pretty impressive.
We've got some facts and figures here.
We've got some numbers here.
Our favorite.
That's what I love, these numbers.
Right.
To kind of drive home just what kind of event this is and how much in volume and, more importantly, pounds you keep out of the Summit County landfill at the end of the day. So with respect to e-waste, it was about 500 pounds worth of e-waste. And that goes down, it looks like, to MedTech.
Yes,
down,
MedTech.
That's a company down in Salt Lake City that specializes in either reusing, repurposing, or breaking down a lot of these electronic equipment. It's really fascinating process they do down there. Paint is a big one.
Yes.
6,000 pounds of oil paint is what you recovered this past fall.
Yeah, just one event.
In one event. 6,300 pounds approximately of latex paint. Now, the interesting thing, and this is, again, that's what was covered earlier. We apologize for repeating this stuff, but it bears repeating. Latex paint, if hardened, allowed to harden, set up, can be disposed of at the landfill.
Right.
That's the nature of latex paint. You know that if it sits in a can long enough, it dries out. It's water-based. It dries out. And so it's latex. It's the same thing, you know, we should or shouldn't wear to spin class sometimes, depending on who you are. And so that's latex. It's a material.
Yeah.
All right. So don't – you can bring your latex paint. I guess you guys will accept it.
We will.
But otherwise, you don't need to. You can put it in your dumpster. You can add kitty litter to it to help it harden, et cetera. Yes. If it sits in your can long enough, it will harden itself. And so you can bring it, but you guys end up having to pay for it being hauled away.
Yes.
That's part of your item, right?
Right.
So in the future, maybe latex paint is something you would know, consider.
Yeah, if you can be patient and wait for it to harden.
Yeah, it doesn't. You don't need to bring it to that. All right, but the oil-based paint, yes.
Yes, definitely bring that to us.
Flammable liquids, they include things like varnishes, gasoline, diesel. I don't know why. I guess that ages or it gets old. Petroleum distillates. 1,200 pounds of material you handled last year. That's let's see, just a couple other things.
Now, I see a note here about mattresses
and
a $10 an item charge. Can you bring mattresses to the hazmat day?
You can, yep.
Okay.
$10 each for each mattress.
Fantastic.
That's a fee. Everything
else
is free.
Yes.
But it will cost you $10
to
drop off a mattress.
Right.
Now, where does a mattress go?
They go to a company in Salt Lake called Springback Mattress, and they also offer pickup services if you'd rather have them come to your house. It does cost more than $10, but I've explored around their website, and their website's really cool. You can kind of see them deconstructing mattresses, like the metal springs are separated from the fabric parts, and they seem really good at what they do, so we're happy to have them.
So they take them apart.
Yeah. We're happy to have
them.
They'll be directly at our event, and you pay them directly
$10.
And they $10
to drop off any mattress of any size.
Per item. Like, I think the box spring, like each piece, if you have a box spring and a mattress, it'd be $20 for each item.
Right.
So that's a good point. That's the one item that does have a fee associated. Now, you're going to accept donations if somebody wants to give you $5 or $10, which they should.
Yeah, it'll be cash donations at the event, but you can always go to recycleutah.org and make a donation with a credit card online anytime.
So. Okay. And of course, pharmaceuticals. Last event, you collected 100 gallons of pharmaceuticals, pills.
Yeah.
And other liquid-based pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, and sharps, syringes.
25 gallons of sharps.
Oh, yeah.
5 5-gallon buckets.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's a lot.
That's impressive. I don't know what's impressive from how you collect it or impressive that it's out there.
Yeah.
All of the
it's
above.
Sitting around.
Right. Yeah.
Right. But that you can drop that stuff off.
And that can be pretty harmful to our water if you know, if you're flushing meds down the toilet. That's something,
right.
You know, that the bacteria in the water and stuff, they cannot. That is too
right.
much.
Right. The wastewater treatment plant can't break down pharmaceutical compounds, long chain carbon compounds that most pharmaceuticals are. Mike Lors has been on the show to talk about how it can upset their biological processes. Mm-hmm. And then it passes through. And where does it end up?
Mm-hmm.
East Canyon
Creek.
There you go. Yeah. And then where does it end up from there? Traces of it can end up in the plant and fish life downstream. So, yes, bring your old or expired pharmaceuticals or those that you otherwise don't need anymore to this event. You can always bring it to the police station, too.
Yep.
They have a 24-hour drop-off for pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, so. And this can be prescription, non-prescription, vitamins, anything that's expired or not wanted anymore, you can bring.
Okay.
Now, let's also just quickly mention, if you can't make it this day to the hazardous, drop-off, what are people's other options? Because there are some other options throughout the year. Maybe not
there
as convenient.
Are. Yeah. So the Summit County Landfill has a separate hazardous waste area that is also free. So you can go to the Summit County Landfill any other day of the year and bring your hazardous waste there. And it's the same items that they accept there as well. They also accept mattresses there for $12 each, so it'll cost you a little bit more. but that's an option. And then pharmaceuticals, like Chris said, you can take them to the police station. There's a 24/7 drop-off there, and it's just a box. You don't have to talk to anybody. You can just drop them off in the box. You can also go to the sheriff's department as well.
Okay. How long has this event been going on? I mean, you guys haven't been around for a long time.
I had to confirm this information from a different source yesterday. And she said the first one was in December 1999.
Wow.
And it's happened quarterly as of 2000. It used to be at the Recycle Center. And then we moved over to Canyons in 2010.
Okay.
And originally there was a fee, like per pound fee. We've kind of been able to do away with that. So.
Right. Yeah. But at the end of the day, it still probably costs you guys.
Yeah, Recycle Utah and the Park City Municipal and Summit County helps with the fee. So,
and the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District.
Yeah, they help.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, again, you probably have to write a check to Veolia or the company that manages this hazardous waste. So that's why your donations on Saturday go a long way to helping cover that gap in fees. All right, so you've been doing this since, let's say, the beginning of this century, right?
I like that perspective.
Okay, but I kind of ran the numbers based on year over year. You've been handling, somewhere between 30 and 60,000 pounds of materials over the course of the year, entire year. So if you run the numbers, I average about 40,000 pounds. It's over 500,000 pounds of hazardous waste. We're not talking regular garbage. This isn't cardboard and paper and banana peels. This is hazardous waste, chemicals. One of the items you have on your list is strychnine, poisons. You take poisons.
Right.
That's a really good point.
So Swanner gets rid of all their poisons, right? You guys, sorry.
The poisons that our neighbors are throwing over the fence.
Right. Okay.
It's happened before.
But you can bring your herbicides. Seriously, you can bring your herbicides, your pesticides, your insecticides, your fungicides, your rodenticides, right? Mm-hmm. Every side imaginable. If you don't have any need for it or it's expired, bring it to this event and get rid of it safely, because that's a great example of what can happen if that goes in the landfill. One thing I meant that was mentioned last in Leslie's show that I wanted to correct is that somebody said that the landfill that we have, Summit County Landfill, the new cell is lined. Well, it's not in operation yet. The new cell will be lined. It's been under construction. We're still using the old cell, which is unlined. So all this waste that gets in there and the leachate that's generated makes its way down into what? Anybody?
Groundwater.
Table, yes, thank you. Sorry. Right. makes its way into our water table, and that is what we're trying to avoid. And this hazardous waste, whether it's oil-based paints and solvents and gas and diesel and strychnine, all has a capacity to get into our water table in our existing landfill, which will be the old cell will be closed up soon and the new cell will be started. That's why you do this. And that's 500,000 pounds, if not more, that have been kept out of this landfill over the last 10, 12, 15 years. That's fantastic. Well done. Any other comments about that?
No, I think I've talked about this enough?
All right. We got a few more minutes.
Sure.
Let's turn to another event.
Yeah. So we have a couple other events coming up. We have Dumpster Days, which this year we're doing a little differently. We're doing 1 week in the spring and 1 week in the fall. So it will be next week, May 8th through 13th, 9 to 4 each day at Recycle Utah's center. And so we will have a large dumpster for green waste and yard waste, and then we'll have a large dumpster for large garbage items that might not fit into your curbside trash can. And so into that trash or that dumpster, you can put basically anything that's not recyclable and not hazardous, so any large garbage items. And the goal of this is to help kind of save you a trip to the landfill, which reduces CO2 emissions for people that are driving out there. So we act kind of as a temporary transfer station during those days.
Great.
And then you also mentioned yard waste.
Yes.
And so does that also go to the landfill? What's the end point for that?
It will go to the landfill, but they do have a separate yard waste area. So it will go to that rather than just being mixed in with everything else so that it can decompose correctly and not be suffocated and let off methane.
Methane.
Yeah.
Okay. Again, fantastic. Where are these dumpsters going to be located?
At Recycle Utah Center at 1951 Woodbine Way.
All right. So in the past, they used to be located at different parts. If I remember, they used to be located around town.
Yeah,
dumpsters.
They'll just
Not
be at
anymore.
Our center. Yeah,
just at the center.
Yeah.
So bring that stuff. Again.
And I know that you guys have had some issues in the past. I think people showing up in the evenings or at night and kind of just like dropping a couch and ditching it and heading out. So you do have specific hours for this, right?
We do. 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. each day.
Okay.
And the dumpster leaves at 4. So you need to come by 4. I mean, the dumpster leaves to the landfill before the landfill closes for the day. So 4 o'clock is a pretty hard close each day.
Yeah.
It's a hard stop. Right. 4 o'clock, but no commercial sources of material or green waste, let's say. If you're a landscaper, don't show up.
Yeah, you can bring that to the landfill.
You have to, This is for private individual residents or homeowners to take advantage. Again, no hazardous waste products. Don't come in, dump your paint into these dumpsters.
Right.
Which reminds me, going back to the hazardous waste event, that has a hard stop too.
Yes.
That's critical.
1 p.m.
Yeah.
Do not show up. Well, again, you could show up at 1:05. You'll be turned away.
Yeah.
So if you're not in the queue, I assume, by 1 p.m., you're going to be turned away.
Yeah.
All right. And this is for Summit County residents.
Right.
Yeah, we will be asking for zip codes. So show up with Summit County zip code when you can show up.
Really?
Yes.
So,
I mean, we do it to track to see where people come from.
Right.
You know, how much city residents versus county residents we get. It's partly for our tracking and then partly because the funding for the event comes from Summit County. So or Summit County area. Yeah.
So have a Summit County zip code.
Yes.
Chris, you're out. Don't get any ideas. We know you don't live in 84098.
I'm in. I'm just thinking of my brother-in-law who lives in
Heber. Code.
What?
Park City zip code, 84060.
Yeah. Yeah, right. But the Summit County area, not Heber.
Right.
Okay. Right. All right, so that's critical, hard stop, because you get hundreds and hundreds of cars, and you try to process them as quickly as possible, and that's a challenge.
Yes.
All right, a couple more minutes.
Yeah, we've got a couple more minutes left, and you have another event coming up quickly here, your next green drinks.
We do. So also next week, Tuesday, May 9th, from 6 to 8 p.m. at Park City Coffee Roaster, we will have our May green drinks event. It is a free event. We'll have drinks and appetizers, and we will be talking about local recycling. So we'll have representatives there from Momentum Recycling and Green Fiber, and Momentum does all of our glass recycling, so we send all of our glass to them. They are a company in Salt Lake, and then Green Fiber is also in Salt Lake, and we send some of our paper to them.
You guys are planning a field trip to those locations later this week, correct?
Yes, on Thursday we will be visiting them and seeing how they process all of the recyclables that you drop off to us.
That'll be fascinating.
I'm excited. I'm very excited. I've never been to those, so it'll be the first time for me. Yeah. I've been to the landfill. I've seen the other side of things, but never.
Yeah.
Right, and that's where it's recycled, reprocessed, or otherwise reused. Okay. One other event, and this is kind of a one-off thing, is that I believe at next week's city council meeting, there will be a draft resolution submitted regarding a plastic bag ban.
Yes.
So you're going to be at that event, I assume?
We are, yeah. So it's not our initiative. Right. We're not spearheading it, but we are encouraging people to go to the city council meeting and show your support if you support a plastic bag ban. So it's Thursday, May 11th.
Thursday, May 11th, it will be a work session or so, I think. You have to check the agenda. I'll go to the website and check the agenda. Yeah, it's being spearheaded by Park City Plastics Coalition.
Right.
Plastic Free PC.
Yes.
That's what they're about. And then trying to attempt to help support and help draft this resolution that would ban certain bags of certain thickness or gauge or so. Yeah. So we'll find out the details of that next week.
Yes.
All right. So we'll follow that. That's about any other items going. How are things going? It's springtime at Recycle Utah. Is it crazier than normal, or is it just typically a crazy place in general?
It's a pretty crazy place. I mean, we get on average 360 cars a day, just for perspective.
360 cars a day?
That's average. So some days it's a little less. A lot of days it's more. And right now we're pretty busy as we're opening up our warehouse thrift store and getting more items. And, you know, people are doing spring cleaning and dropping off lots
that's
of recyclables.
What I was wondering.
Yeah. So we've been busy, definitely.
And your hours again, of course?
Are 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m.
AM to 5:30. That's what, 10 hours, 9 hours. So 306 cars. That's like almost one car a minute.
Yeah.
Every minute of every hour that you're open.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's impressive from the point of view of what you guys handle, and impressive from the residential point of view of what they, you know, who cares about this stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Recycle rather than throw stuff away. All right. Well, Carolyn, Molly with Recycle Utah, thanks so much for joining us. Website, again, for final details on the event?
RecycleUtah.org. We'll see you out there on Saturday from 9 until 1 for the hazmat thing.
You'll be there, Carolyn?
I'll be
there.
Are you
going to be dressed up?
I'll greet you when you come. Thanks for coming.
Point you in the right direction.
Doing the right thing by showing
you're
up.
Not going to be in a hazmat suit with a respirator?
Maybe. If that's what Rotary needs, that's what I'll do.
You do what has to be done.
Yeah, whatever needs to be done. That stuff
just
is nasty.
Don't handle the
dedicated to the cause.
Yep.
Right. Let someone else handle the strychnine. So, all right. Thanks again for joining us this morning. Great information as always. And we'll loop back with you when we get the final numbers on this event.
Yeah. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Let's take a break for some underwriters and sponsors when we come back.
That's right. We'll be talking with Jason Bartow, the executive director of Relief Utah, about the new organization, new name, new partnership, as well as what they've got going on this spring.
Maybe some new trees. Everything's new.
That's right. Everything.
All right. That's the second half of the show. We'll be right back.
This is Katie Noble, the real estate doctor at Heyman Law and proud sponsor of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. I can perform an examination of your real estate transaction and offer my prescription. I can also assist with the birth of your LLC or corporation. The Juris Doctor is in at our office in Kimball Junction. Our website is deaconhaymond.com.
Park City Restore is grateful for the many hands that have made it successful. Your gift of time means more affordable housing services are available locally through Habitat for Humanity. Plus, volunteering at the Restore gives you a first look at the amazing treasures donated for resale. Learn how you can get involved at habitat-utah.org. Click on the big yellow volunteer button. Habitat for Humanity of Summit and Wasatch Counties is a nonprofit organization.
Miller Orthodontics supports KPCW and their involvement with area youth and teens. Speaking of youth, did you know Invisalign has a specific type of aligner just for teens? Over 3/4 of our Invisalign patients are 19 or younger. More information about Invisalign Teen is available at m2ortho.com.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And until our second half guest gets here this morning, we are going to talk about a park record
op-ed from
that
Saturday.
Chris has a few words to say about.
I have a few words, yes. More than a few words, but I'll try to.
But we'll limit it to a few words.
I think I already spoke about 1,000 words in the first
half. You were a first half guest as
well. I was the first half guest. It's an editorial titled Park City is Spreading False Info About Climate Solutions. And there's some points in here to be taken. But there's also some, basically the gist of the article now is that this individual feels that Park City has green solutions to getting to net zero, right, by 2022 and 2032. 2022 for their municipal operations, and they want to be net zero as a community by 2032. And part of that, getting to that, will include installing more solar panels around the city, relying more on solar power, relying more on, say, wind power, and implementing energy efficiency procedures, measures, initiatives, programs. And the writer feels that this is disingenuous, basically, that each one of these items actually can have a larger footprint, carbon footprint, than the existing means of how we get, say, electricity.
Hmm.
Yes, exactly. So here's
an example.
All right, example: solar power. And I'll just read what the writer says. Harnessing solar energy requires solar cells, and solar cell production emits greenhouse gases worse than carbon dioxide. Solar cell production emits greenhouse gases, and he talks about how they use hexafluoroethane, nitrogen trifluoride, sulfur hexafluoride. These are exotic compounds that are have large greenhouse capacities, a great affinity to absorbing infrared light, heat. Okay, so all right, granted, but the amount that they, for every or so ton of these hydrofluorocarbons that are emitted in the process of manufacturing solar panels, tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of tons of carbon dioxide and methane are being emitted by burning fossil fuels. So coal, natural gas, et cetera.
And I think that's, a common trade-off that we have to think of, like, almost in relation to everything. But, a new house, if you're going to rebuild a house, if you're going to build a super efficient house, is it worth rebuilding or just retrofitting? Or are you going to get a new car that has much lower emissions than a really old model? What's the trade-off in the creation of a new car versus the continued use of the old one? So it's a common dilemma, right?
You know what? It's right here. There's no free lunch in trying to get to net zero. There's impacts of one form or another.
Right. So it's all in the math behind.
Yeah. And so you have to look into the math behind that. So that's there's toxic materials used to generate or produce solar panels, but they're replacing something that's far more damaging, coal-fired power plants in this sense, and natural gas-fired power plants. All right. So that's the solar take he has. Wind farms are also damaging to the environment. And again, I'll just quote, it says, turbines used to harvest wind energy require the fossil fuel infrastructure to manufacture them. I don't get that, because I don't think Rocky Mountain Power is going around making turbines. They're independent companies that make wind turbines and the generators that Rocky Mountain Power might purchase them,
think he's getting at the carbon footprint of just creating one, right? The factory that creates a turbine. But again, alternatives. What are the pros and cons?
You're right. He says, when considering the ability of wind turbines to replace greenhouse gas emissions, we must account for the mining, manufacturing, transporting, constructing, land clearances, maintaining, decommissioning, and waste that support wind turbines.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But again,
yeah,
you could replace coal-fired power plants with that. We must consider you know, account for the mining and manufacturing, transporting, constructing, all this sort of a new coal-fired power plant.
Right, absolutely.
At the end of the day, the footprint, the impact, the carbon impact of a wind farm is far less than a coal-fired power plant. All right, so it's just kind of, I want to say it's disingenuous, but it's not a apples to apples comparison. He also goes into deforestation involved with wind farms. Farmers and ranchers lease their land because it has such a small impact.
Mm-hmm.
A typical wind turbine has a small deforestation impact, land clearing impact. They can still farm around it. It doesn't take much. And of course, they're making money off of that too.
Right.
So I don't get the deforestation. And then energy efficiency, he talks about the Jevons paradox. You know the Jevons paradox, familiar? It's established in 1865 by an economist, William Stanley Jevons, that basically says the more efficient we develop processes, the more energy efficient an item or an appliance becomes, the more apt we are to use it even at greater levels.
Mm-hmm.
That might fit for, let's say, now I'm going blank about what it might fit for. Let's say heating your home.
Mm.
Some people who get a more energy efficient furnace might be inclined to throw up their temperature so they're a little warmer because they're paying the same amount of money. So that's an example of Jevons' paradox. You know, increased efficiency allows me to maybe be a little warmer, a little more comfortable.
Drive your car farther because
That's a good point. If you buy a more fuel efficient car, are you going to drive more often? Perhaps.
I don't know.
Maybe, but perhaps not.
Right.
But here's the thing. If I buy an energy efficient light bulb, an LED, replace my condenser, am I going to leave my lights on longer? Am I going to use my lights more? You know, no. So there's Jevons' paradox applies to some things, but not all things. Just because I have a more efficient, say, washer and dryer doesn't mean I'm going to leave it running load after load. I'm going to find,
24/7.
I'm going to do my neighbor's laundry because I got a great energy efficient washer dryer. Mm-hmm. So there's limits to the Jevons paradox thing that goes on. So the final comment, and we'll wrap up and hopefully Jason will be here, is that there's no solutions. There's no alternatives offered. It's just kind of a 500-word, op-ed about this is what's wrong. This is why it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
But offer a solution. And maybe the solution is, we change our behaviors too. In addition, technology won't solve all our problems.
Right.
But we have to change our behaviors. I agree with that. We've always talked about
how we have
to be less consumptive, understand the carbon footprint that each one of us has through our consumptive behaviors. And so that has to change too. So it's a package deal. But I find that Park City isn't being disingenuous it's false information. It's not false information.
Yeah.
All right. All right, well, go read
TBD,
that op-ed.
I have a feeling the conversation on this one is not going to end here. I have a feeling this one is going to come back around.
Think we'll get a phone call?
yeah.
Well, let's take a break.
Yeah.
And I think Jason Bartow from ReLeaf is here to join us to talk about their organization, All About Trees, ReLeaf. And we'll talk about that right after a break from these underwriters. It's This Green Earth.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided in part by AMA Waterways and Park City Air, Cruise, and Travel, 565-4730, parkcityaircruiseandtravel.com. Long, Reimer, Weiniger, Bepler, Estate Planning, Family Law, lrw-law.com, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Hey, it's Kyle Haas, senior at Park City High School with the Minor Details Show, 7-8 p.m. every Saturday on KPCW, bringing you high school news, community events with classic and new music. Minor Details is sponsored by the Park City UPS stores, Miller Orthodontics, Elliott Work Group, and U.S. Bank Park City. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to This Green Earth, the weekly talk show on environmental issues and concepts of sustainability. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And live radio, as always.
That's right.
It's a,
thinking
it's
on
a
our
real
feet.
Moving target sometimes. And so we're still waiting on Jason Bartow from ReLeaf to show up. In the meantime, we fortunately do have some things, other things to talk about.
Yeah.
Particularly you, Nell. Maybe we'll have some intelligent conversation now. I'll stop talking. So what do you have going on at Swanner?
Ah, okay. So I think that now we have Jason Bartow on the line.
That's what you have.
Live radio. That is what we have at Swanner. So let's talk with Jason for the next 10 minutes here.
Or so. And then we'll get back to your story.
That's right.
All right. Jason Bartow joins us by phone. Jason, are you there?
Good morning, Chris. Good morning, Nell.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for joining us this morning. You've been on the show in the past a number of times, certified arborist, and you're with, in the past promoting Wasatch Back Trees, and now you have a brand new name, organization. Tell us about it.
Well, we are now known as ReLeaf Utah.
Okay.
And we decided to change our name to better, to allow us to spread our branches across the rest of the state, if you will. We've been really successful here in Summit County and Wasatch County, but we're not always able to plant in April here, and we're not always able to plant October, November. So in addition to sharing what we know to the rest of the state, we've also gained about 3 extra months of planting time.
Fantastic. And that new name, just to clarify for listeners, is ReLeaf, spelled R-E-L-E-A-F, right? As in a tree.
Yes, as we're providing some relief from the heat and relief from bad air and relief from bad water.
Right. Okay.
Relief from no shade.
So your missions and goals and objectives remain the same, I assume.
They're close to identical, but about the only thing that we won't take across the rest of the state is our fruit nuts program.
Oh.
And the reason being is there are other organizations, Green Urban Lunchbox down in the Salt Lake Valley, that has a great program that's real similar to ours. So, but we did feel there was a need for science-based tree planting across the state. And our motto is that we use science for what we plant, where we plant, and when we plant it.
Okay. So give us some examples of what you plant and where you plant, and maybe some examples of what you prefer not to be planted.
Well, you know, we're looking to plant trees that are going to have a longer impact. They're going to last longer than 10 or 15 years. So down in the Salt Lake Valley, we're looking at bur oaks, which we've also planted up here. Kentucky coffee tree is another tree that we're going to love to plant. But we're also targeting areas. We're using aerial imagery, census overlays, GIS, and recent air quality studies to really try to find out which area is most underserved and where we can do the most amount of work and the most amount of good.
And so are there specific areas that, you know, using those techniques have just jumped off the map to you guys that you'll be focusing on right away?
Yes, unfortunately, the northwest corner of Salt Lake City, sort of the Rose Park area, Fair Park area, Poplar Grove, are all areas where through different research we've seen that we have a disparity in income. The majority of the people that live there have lower income or live below the poverty level. We're seeing extra health visits. And we're also seeing that's where the air is the dirtiest. So we want to be focusing one of our efforts in trying to plant over 1,000 trees in that neck of the woods there.
Wow. And what kind of trees would they be?
You know, again, not that big, much different from what we're seeing here. We'd probably use some London plane trees, which I guess is different. If we're going to be planting in some smaller areas where we have have a conflict with utilities, we're still going to use the Japanese tree lilac, which is my favorite small size tree, and it works great up here and it works great down there. We'll probably get to look at some, maybe a basswood tree. There's several trees that don't quite meet our survival or hardiness zones up here that I then have a chance to plant down in that neck of the woods. Bald cypress is one that I tried to plant up there that didn't work, that I'd like to plant more of down there.
Bald cypress?
Bald cypress, yes. It's not a tree. Even though it's normally, it's actually the state tree of Louisiana.
Right.
But it has the ability to withstand drought.
Huh.
Interesting.
That is interesting. I would not think that.
Yeah, it's a really versatile tree. And there's... we actually still have one kicking in the Camas Valley, but I think there are rogue frosts that have gotten the better of the other five that I planted here.
Right.
There are quite a few down in the Salt Lake Valley that are thriving and doing just great.
I think they would be great for Swanner. To turn Swanner into a giant cypress dome. Some beautiful cypress domes. And
trying to get trees out of that wetland, Cherniak.
Do what I can. Doing what I can, Jason. She refuses.
You better be careful. There might be a group of rogue planters coming out someday and plant a bunch of tall cypress on your wetland there.
That is a thing, isn't it? Rogue planting.
Rogue planting. But you would never consider doing it on a...
First in the San Francisco area, I believe.
People going around planting midnight planters?
I like that. Yeah. I like that concept.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, not on the Swanner Preserve, to clarify.
All right.
Except we don't do it at Swanner. Okay.
All right. Fair enough.
Only natives. Only natives.
We got a couple more minutes. Is there any status or update on the bark beetle situation? I know this was an extremely cold winter, and that's what we need to control bark beetle infestation. Any thoughts on that, or is it too early to tell?
I think it's a little too early to tell yet. There's still, you know, a lot of snow higher up. And, you know, one of the downsides is that they, at least in the Uintas and down south, they ate everything that there was for them to eat.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So that their numbers should naturally be decreasing anyway. And hopefully a really cold winter helped to put a dent into them on there. It seems like we are keeping them off of making any further progress west.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like they pretty much have fortunately stalled in the Uintas with a couple incidents on the Wasatch Back, but people have been really vigorous in monitoring for their arrival.
Good.
And I think that's going to help us, I hope, stave off any destruction of our trees over here in the Park City area.
So, Jason, we've got 2 minutes left, and we wanted to talk about what people should be doing in their own yards at this time of year. You know, it's spring. Is there anything we should be thinking about for the health of the trees that we have in our landscaping at this point?
You know, probably the most important thing is to make sure that you have a nice 2 to 4 inch thick layer of mulch or wood chips around the base of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
You want to take that out as far to the drip line as you can, which a lot of times is not practical from a landscape perspective. But as far out from the base of the tree as you can put down wood chips, that helps stimulate the environment that we find in our natural forest.
Mm.
And so all we're doing is looking to recreate an environment that the trees would have had if they were growing up in a natural silviculture environment.
Fantastic.
Okay. And that's all types, whether they're pine, fir, or dare I say aspen, too?
You know, just about any tree is going to be happy when we enhance its root zone.
Okay.
I don't know of a tree that wouldn't be. And there's, you know, I know we've talked about this, but there's so much turf around trees.
Right.
That they compete for each other. And there's more scientific studies coming out that's showing we get double the root mass out of a tree that doesn't have to compete with turf and other understory vegetation. Right off the get-go, we can get something that uses a lot of water, get rid of that, replace with some wood chips to make all our trees happier.
Easy enough.
Right. Let your trees breathe. Mulch to the drip line. How about that? There's my new
catchphrase. Mulch to the drip. Well, and the one other thing is to make sure you keep it about 6 inches away from the trunk of the tree.
Oh, so it's kind of a donut. There's a kind of a donut aspect.
And we have so there's a practice out there called volcano mulching. And we prefer to see just the opposite, and we're using the term donut mulching.
Perfect.
I like it.
I like it. We can picture it. Done. Thanks, Jason. Hey, real quick, any events that ReLeaf has coming up?
Well, on Friday, we're going to be at Artique with Katie and the rest of her crew. And we're really excited to have an opportunity to present like that. There's a lot of exciting, energetic people over here in Camas and across the rest of the county that hopefully will join together to see some of the beautiful art. Katie has, unfortunately, we're on the radio, but I saw the most gorgeous piece of jewelry that was made out of a maple leaf. And it looked like somehow she had turned it into ceramic, if you will. And I'm not an artist to say what it was, but it was gorgeous. And we were chatting sometimes. We sometimes find like our work is similar to art. We, if it's not art itself, we refer to when we see a field with no trees as an open canvas. And when I talk about what trees I'm going to plant, I talk about the palette that I get to draw from.
Right.
And we try to include a mixture of you know, different attributes from colors and hardiness and not planting them necessarily in a straight line. So I think there's some validity to that description as arborists, as artists.
So that event is being held at Artique. That's in Camas. Again, it's Friday, May 5th from 6 to 9. It says here, right here in your little promotional, come celebrate Barbara Richardson as 2016 Citizen Forester of the Year. You can learn more about ReLeaf.
Yeah, we've been real fortunate to have such great volunteers. And I think I said a couple years back when I was recognized with something that it's not the individual person here, but it's all of the people, all of the volunteers, everybody that gives a hoot about trees in Summit County that makes these recognitions possible. We'd just be a couple of tree lovers if we didn't have everybody else's help.
All right. Well, we got to run, Jason. Again, it's at Artique at 283 North Main Street in Camas this Friday at 6 p.m. Jason, thanks again for joining us, as always.
All righty. Thanks a lot, Chris.
All right. Well, you know what? Now let's not take a break. We got to cover your story because it's really interesting. And we got 5 minutes.
That's right. Time flies. Another hour has passed.
So what's going on at Swanner? Birds? Sandhill cranes?
Yeah, and this is more about what's going on in the community rather than just at the preserve. So okay. We get a ton of questions about sandhill cranes at this time of year. Like, where do they come from?
Why are they so loud?
And yeah, why do they wake me up? True story, we have received a complaint that sandhill cranes are too loud and they wake one of our neighbors up too early in the morning. So we can't control
the sounds of the cranes, but
most people, they're like this beloved like harbinger of spring. People love to hear them coming back. And I know I fall into that category.
Yeah.
When you see or hear the cranes in the spring, it's like it's official. You know, spring is coming back.
Right.
So usually they come back in March. Last year they came back in early February,
right,
which was like
was
really way out early. Of the norm, but they came back a little bit later this year, and then they'll nest in April and lay their eggs in April. So that's kind of the standard timing. It does seem to be shifting over the 10 years we've been tracking. It is shifting a little earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So
they arrive early. Do they stay a little later? So is it shifting
on both?
That's
a lot
ends?
Harder to track how long they're here for whatever
they
reason.
They don't tell you when they're leaving?
Yeah, exactly. They don't give us the heads up. It's like, wait, I guess we haven't seen them for several days. Are they gone?
They don't have a calendar of events.
Yeah, they're not posting that. So this year, every year for the past 10 years, there's been a nest that's immediately adjacent to the Eco Center. So it's really fun to watch
Same
and track.
Nest.
Same nest, same pair. Cranes can live to be like over 30 years old and they mate for life.
Wow.
And so this same pair keeps coming back to this same nest. And this year they laid their eggs on April 21st and April 22nd. And then they'll incubate those eggs for just about a month, like 29 to 31 days or somewhere in that range. And so most of the sandhill crane nests throughout Summit County right now will be incubating eggs, even right. if they are staggered a little bit in timing. And
how do they? I know yeah. it's going to sound goofy, yeah. but seriously, they're really leggy. Tall. Yeah. How do they totally. Actually get down? What does that look
they
like?
Just, they like fold their legs under them. Okay. Yeah. And they kind of fluff their wings out. And sometimes the eggs are more like under a
the wing rather than under their body.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's not just the female incubating. The two cranes kind of rotate every couple of hours. So one heads out to exercise and mm-hmm. eat and do all of that good stuff. And then they'll come back and switch who's incubating the eggs. And another really common question we get is like, where do the cranes here go for the winter? And the answer is we're relatively sure that the cranes from this part of Utah head down to New Mexico, meaning that they have the shortest migration of any migrating sandhill crane. Some head up to like, you know, the boreal, you know, areas, you know, they're heading up to Canada and Alaska. These just kind of head from New Mexico to Utah and call it good up here in the mountains. So it's
Taos.
yeah.
Santa Fe.
That's
I'm
right.
sorry.
That's
they
right.
could probably go to Santa Fe.
And there's a reserve for cranes called Bosque del Apache in New Mexico.
I would
where
go
a lot
there.
Of them
that
pay.
Sounds
yeah,
like
it's
a nice
delightful.
Place.
There's appropriate, you know, foods and crops planted.
Right. Habitat. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's yep. where they winter.
Yep. They prefer to nest and feed and, you know, spend most of their lives in wetland type of areas.
So this is one pair mm-hmm. nest. Others mm-hmm. around that you guys have identified within the preserve?
Yeah, so on the preserve itself, there are about seven nesting pairs each year, seven nest areas that we've identified. And then there are others throughout the community that we get calls about as well, usually when there's a concern about it, you know, mm-hmm. with a disturbance or
honking.
Something like that. But
indiscriminate honking that goes on.
Just, you know, loud and disorderly. Birds.
Yeah.
But these birds, the average height of them is 4 feet tall. That's another common question. They are as big as they look. They're huge.
And their wingspan.
And they'll weigh like 10 pounds. Wingspan is over 6.5 feet on average. So, I mean, these are huge birds.
Right.
Yeah.
So, crane cam? Is there a crane cam?
Yeah, there's a live crane cam, so you can watch the cranes on the nest right now. If you go to SwanarnEcoCenter.org, there's a link on the homepage. And there are also some clips on that page of, you know, exciting things happening on the crane cam from the past year.
And when are the chicks due?
So they laid the eggs at about the 20th of last month, so we'll be expecting them to hatch about the 20th of this month.
All right, so mm-hmm. we'll stay posted.
Yeah,
on crane cam.
Last year we caught the eggs hatching.